You know, I know I can be viewed sometimes as a bit of a curmudgeon.
A curmudgeon now. Tell us more.
But I do love a good Christmas movie.
You can't help it. When they nail it, it's great.
Yeah, it's very true. Although, I do admit that, you know, the old school, the just treacle Christmas movie, I can only appreciate in a nostalgic sense. Like, you know, your Rudolph, right, the Red-Nosed Reindeers and what have you. But I do appreciate something that tries to make a Christmas movie that both gets something for adults and still has a heart to it.
Absolutely.
And I think that The Night Before is one of those films that actually manages to achieve that.
Yeah, I was thinking about it actually on the drive home and trying, you know, you always kind of find the movies like it's kind of half this and it's kind of half that. And it was, I don't know, it was kind of like half Bad Santa meets something a little more whimsical and joyful and coming of age almost, or coming of mid-30s.
So I wouldn't even think Bad Santa, because that was almost cynical. That was cynical.
It was totally
and
cynical.
And I wouldn't say this film is cynical at all. In fact, it's more Harold and Kumar's Christmas movie mixed with what have you, you know.
Yeah, it's almost like The Hangover, but not so ridiculous. I don't know. I mean, having a hard time finding the right
connection. In some ways, it felt like connection. It was thematically connected to This Is the End even a little bit, if for no other reason that so many of the famous friends of that group of people who make movies together and made that movie as well as this one are coming together for it. But and I don't want to oversell this, because I don't think it's as funny as that movie is, but that's because it realizes it does have to have a heart. It's still a Christmas movie, and it focuses at least 20% of its effort on that.
Well, I feel that This Is the End is a satire of Hollywood and pop culture, whereas this doesn't make any statements like that. So it doesn't have that raw edge of, look how messed up this section of society is and how superficial and terrible. Let's smite them. It has more of a, these are friends that are goofing around trying to find some sort of meaning. And the hilarity and ridiculousness they run into is genuinely hilarious and funny.
I think a good message for people who this is directed at, people in their like late 20s, early 30s, the characters here played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Seth Rogen, and Anthony Mackie, best friends since high school, who formed a Christmas tradition of getting together and going out and partying like crazy people at various traditional Christmas haunts, like FAO Schwartz and I forget the Big Christmas Tree in New York. I forget where that
and
is.
And 30 Rockefeller.
Yeah, 30 Rockefeller. Like, they do it every year because they came together for Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character when his parents were killed one Christmas by a drunk driver, and so they've been doing it, but they're kind of like, okay, this has to be the last one. Seth Rogen is going, he's married and his wife is pregnant. They're about to have a baby. He's all about, I'm going to be the greatest dad. I'm going to be totally serious. Anthony Mackie, on the other hand, has just recently, although having been in professional football for a while, has suddenly become a superstar. And he's got to focus more on his career. And they're kind of saying, well, this is probably the last time we're going to be able to have a chance to do this. So let's do it upright. And I think the film's focus is really on how, if you have friends that you're that close to, distance shouldn't matter, but so much, because you're going to have more distance. You're going to evolve, and that's natural. You need to get ready for that, for evolving and growing and going into different spaces, meeting people, forming your own families. But at the same time, it's important to remember to make time for those people as well. They're your other family.
Absolutely. I mean, really, I think this is a therapeutically healthy movie for people, I should say, because this isn't, like, I keep referring to coming of age, but this is like coming of a different age.
Yeah.
Because it's another milestone you go through in life where you have to now tumble into the seriousness of life, where you really have to dig into your power years. And you still have to let go of the silly 20s, but there's still so much fun to be had and heart in it. I don't know.
It's a transition from young adult to just adult.
Absolutely. To put on your big pants and wear them all the time.
But that being said, this movie is more made in terms of comedy for people who are still firmly in the young adult phase, because it is a goofy, drug-addled comedy.
Absolutely.
With lots of really filthy humor, with James Franco, possibly his penis? I don't know. Probably not. I do love that you can't have a Seth Rogen film anymore without James Franco showing up some point and them basically saying, you know, if things were different, we'd probably be sleeping together.
They're just so good at it. Like, the minute they get in the camera together, it's just pure delight. I mean, you have to admit, apart from the fabulous scenes, was that Michael Shannon?
Yeah, okay.
Oh, my God.
Michael Shannon, who is quite literally the backbone of this film, who is plays Mr. Green, their drug dealer since high school, who's being at his Michael Shannon-iest in this. He's just freaky, you know?
And yet toned down.
Yeah, still. I mean, for Michael Shannon. But even Michael Shannon is most toned down is kind of freaky.
He's incredible.
but he kind of like is a bookmark in the film at various points when they encounter him to go from one sequence to the next. And his character is by far delivers some of the biggest laughs in the film, but in that he's being completely dry. I mean, he is the straight man to whatever else is going on. And he's just like worth the price of admission alone for him.
Would you say this is a bit of a Christmas Carol going on? Because each of them is stuck in a different time frame and he represents each of the
Christmas ghosts. Say it out loud.
Yeah, the like, first
he's
one,
like,
right?
He smokes pot with each one of them and every time he's like, this is the weed, a Christmas present or whatever. Yeah, and each present. One is like, okay. Yeah, yeah.
It's so good.
It's like, okay. So that's a little, it's not like this whole movie is supposed to be like a Christmas Carol, but it's one of many Christmas references that are sort of, you know, sandwiched in.
And there's even a mischievous little sprite that lives in the city and causes trouble. I mean, they don't present her as a sprite, but she's so much fun and she's so silly. The little hipster that they make fun of.
Played by...
Who was that?
Good Lord, they don't have her listed here on the credits. It's the girl from I know her name, but she's from Arrested Development.
Oh, she was so funny. Ilana Glaser?
No.
I'm looking at it right now.
Well, anyway, if you find it, then
she's from Broad City.
Yes, no.
Ilana Glaser, yeah.
No, it's not Ilana Glaser.
Take a look. It's right here on my IMDb, I swear.
Oh, you're right. It is Ilana Glaser.
I know. She's so cute and so funny.
You're right. She's not who I thought she was. I thought she was somebody else. Anyway, she's really, each one of these people have their own sort of sideline stories, and sometimes they break off. Like Seth's story is mainly, he is so focused on being perfect and being there for his wife that once he takes a lot of drugs, and he's the guy who takes like all the drugs in this movie, quite literally takes all the drugs.
And he pulls it off so realistically. Yeah. It's not over the top. You totally think he's stoned.
And having a bad trip, man.
Good and bad. He just thinks chaotically.
His whole thing is sort of coming to terms with the fact that he's scared out of his mind about this baby that he's about to have. And then Joseph Gordon-Levitt's whole thing is that the girl that got away, once again, Lizzie Kaplan plays, who he's kind of nervous about seeing again, but then does, and it ties back in. There's a whole thing. It's like, why did they ever break up if he's still so in love with her? That's kind of his arc. And then Anthony Mackie's arc is, it's weird. They kind of tease more, like, other stuff is going to go on. Like, there's a whole thing where, like, oh, he's taking steroids or something like that, but that never really becomes a thing.
I have a feeling there's going to be an extended edition that's going to fill in the blanks.
Some deleted scenes that make some of that more pertinent. But, like, he is... His newfound stardom is kind of still sucking up to the guys who are even bigger than him on the football team, being the guy he hated when he was younger, you know? And he also has a thing where he's trying so hard to bring, he's been asked to bring weed to this magical party they all finally got an invite to. They've been searching for invites for years. And the girl, Ilana Glaser, keep stealing it from him. And it's a series of chase sequences with him looking after her that are really funny.
The sequences with her are the best. And the action real good action sequence at one point, some parkour scenes that were really fun to watch. And you realize that this actor really does action well, which we've seen him do, obviously, in his career.
Sure, he's the Falcon.
Absolutely. And you get to see a little bit of that come into play in this one, which was actually delightful.
We got a little bit of Mindy Kaling in there, too, who plays Lizzie Kaplan's friend, who accidentally switches phones with Seth Rogen's character. And when he's really high, he starts tweeting with someone who's tweeting her pictures of his penis and starts contemplating, maybe I would suck a penis.
Oh, when he's in his drug-addled inter-dialogue, it's some of the best stuff I just love it. He does such a good job with the whole tripping through the movie, because sometimes those are so over the top and fake, but he pulls it off, and it's all the... What do you call it when they're undertone, when they're not over the top with it, where he really just...
Understated?
He understates it. And even when he's freaking out, it's not just screaming and flailing.
They didn't push it too far.
They didn't.
Like they got it right to the edge,
yeah.
And then they didn't go over the edge with it. Because most of the time he's freaking out when he's on drugs. He's
absolutely
not having a good trip.
He's having a hard time. And even the scene in a church that's just
there's a scene
fabulous.
Scene with a hallucination with a baby that is one of the bigger laughs of the film. And by the way, if you have not watched the trailer, don't watch it because it gives away some of the best, like, 1-2 punch.
Oh, I didn't know
punchline
that.
Moments in this film where a lot of moments I'm like, damn it, I wish I hadn't seen the trailer because this would have been so much funnier not expecting it, you know, when it's coming. But I will say, if I have one major complaint, there's a whole thing in here with Miley Cyrus where she shows up at the party.
Thank you. Terrible.
And like, they have this premise that all these guys in their 30s and even Michael Shannon in his 40s or older, I'm not even sure how old Shannon is, are just think she's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And the movie keeps reminding you how great they think Miley Cyrus is. I mean, really to a point where, like, Michael Shannon says, oh, come on, it was flawless, talking about her performing Wrecking Ball. And you're like going, does anybody know anybody in their mid-30s or 40s who thinks Miley Cyrus is, like, the greatest musician ever?
It reeks of some sort of sponsorship agreement. Yeah, I think they had to help her image. And
I think that's, well, I mean, it's not even think. I'm certain that's what happened because it's to the point where it's kind of embarrassing. It's like in the first Spider-Man Sam Raimi film where they had, where the action stops completely and they're like, and now here's this musician. And it goes off and like does a video for 20 seconds and you're like, what the fuck just happened? It's like, yeah, they paid for that spot, clearly.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's really just, they managed to weave it into the plot. And Miley herself, actually, when they give her a chance to just talk on camera, acquits herself reasonably well. She even has a funny joke where they're saying, basically, it's like, well, what should I call you? She's like, call me Hannah. She's like, no, just kidding. I was like, okay, that was funny. Like her referencing her past.
It was a good line. Well, she does have that experience. I mean, she's been in many movies.
I don't have any problem with Miley Cyrus. I have a problem with the way that this was clearly a paycheck to get into this movie and throw a ridiculous amount of Miley Cyrus worship on top of her from characters who clearly would not have given a fuck.
No, they're like 15 years too late for that kind of thing. So
exactly.
Because the market of this movie is really people in their early to mid 30s. If they were to create like the fantasy target audience, because, you know, the characters are legitimately going through things that people do during that age group if they are successful or not successful, like Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, who's
stuck in limbo.
Yeah, and he's the one who's stuck in the past, I guess, symbolically. But his story is probably the weakest of the three, if I were to choose one.
Yeah.
Only because
it kind of stops the movie dead every time it follows Joseph Gordon-Levitt's story. You're like, everything stops to say, no, this is the part that you're supposed to feel the most, like, emotion from, and it's so much out of balance with the other two stories.
And even in the script, the other characters are always shying away from it. They're always like, no, 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 no. Yeah. So you never really understand why they're like, no, 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 when obviously this is a good choice for him to pursue this and to grow up and face his music, which is to just commit, to actually not be a commitment-a-phobe dude, right, who wants to be a musician and can't grow up. And so whenever he does take those steps forward, it seems like his friends, including the women, are like, no, pull it back.
And it doesn't
work.
It doesn't help that Lizzie Kaplan, who they don't really give a moment to do anything with until the very, very end, we know nothing about her the whole time. Where she's treated, I mean, I felt like maybe this movie would have been good if it had spent some time following Lizzie Kaplan and Mindy Kaling's story. Like, what else happened to them? A little bit balancing, so we get a feel for who she is instead of it all being just exposition at the end. You're right. That whole sequence, his whole, whenever it got into the emotional side of his story, it felt like they were trying too hard.
Well, they just didn't develop them. Whereas, like, Seth Rogen and his wife, their relationship is developed beautifully. I mean, you totally understand.
Right off the bat, you get it.
And you love her.
Yeah.
And you love him. Like, you really latch on to both characters. Because she, for being, like, a new mom and scared and dealing with all the normal anxieties, does one of the coolest things ever for her husband. And I don't want to give it away because it is kind of like a, aw.
I was like, wow, that's,
she's
I don't think
awesome.
I've ever dated anybody who would have done that for me.
I know. And it's just, I know it's not, you know, politically correct to say it's awesome, but it is awesome. Like it shows you that this couple really is like open to each other's happiness, actually. Yeah. It's a pretty awesome moment. And I fell in love with both of them like the instant that happened because I understood the dynamics of their couple. But yeah, I didn't feel that way at all about like the main, I guess.
And if anything, Anthony Mackie's character doesn't get even close to as much stuff to do as the other two guys do, which is unfortunate because he is really likable on camera. They feel like they're building more of a story for him, but most of it never really goes anywhere. It just gets cut off. It like comes to a conclusion really quick. You know, it is just kind of like, okay, well, there was that.
I was hoping he'd end up with the little hipster chick. I really was.
Well,
the thing is,
that whole story where they established, like, she's kind of like the Grinch of who stole Christmas type of thing. You know, like that.
She's like a little gremlin almost. Yeah, she's fun.
Yeah, and throws in a little Home Alone there for the hell of it, too.
So much homage to good movies in this.
Other classic Christmas films or at least well-loved ones. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, this film is going to fall apart for you or work because of how funny you find it is. And if you like, you know, the type of drug humor, goofy, ridiculous, absurd humor that you see in films like This Is the End, then this is a film I think you'll like as well, where it's not as funny as that movie. It still works much more than it doesn't on a funny level. And it's also got that sort of, like, bros bonding thing too, that if you really like those type of film, old friends bonding, doing best friend stuff, talking about why, you know, going back and figuring out why they're best friends.
I think it's Get Him to the Greek meets The Christmas Carol.
Yeah, you're not selling me on Get Him to the Greek.
Well, the whole drug sequences like cameos from super famous people.
Yeah.
All right, sorry, I tried. But yeah, it is a great bromance movie. And actually probably one of the most genuine bromance movies, too, because, I don't know, I felt like the dialogue was very real between them.
It's strange the way that it can get so absurd, and yet when it actually wants to talk about the thing where the heart really works, which is about that sort of trying to save those friendships that have been around so long, but you're realizing you have to let some stuff go, too, if you want to move on with your life. That stuff all feels genuine and heartfelt and, like, really well written. And I think, if anything, that's the heart of the... They should have kind of spent less time worrying about, like, whether or not Joseph Gordon-Levitt will ever fall in love again and more time about that story. You know,
absolutely.
That's where this movie's the strength in the heart is.
And even Mackie's character, like, I thought the big arc wasn't going to have anything to do with his mom because they kind of threw that at you kind of late in the game.
Yeah.
But it was that he realizes that he's being chumped by these other athletes that he's trying so hard when his friends are right there in front of him.
Yeah.
I was really hoping that would be the punctuation for his story, but instead they kind of veer off in the end. So anyways.
We'll go ahead and give final thoughts.
Well, it's smart. It's witty. There's a lot of chemistry with a lot of the characters. And I liked it. And it was overall feel good. The only weak story, of course, is Joseph Gordon-Levitt's kind of storyline. So I'll dock 2 pills of ecstasy and give it 8 out of 10 trips on acid / mushroom / pot / everything else that Seth Rogen did in the movie.
Fair enough. Seth Rogen is definitely the guy who gives the most funny stuff to do here. In fact, I mean, I would watch this movie again just to watch again the scene where he's in a Catholic church at Christmas Mass, in a Hanukkah sweater, tripping his balls off, pukes in the middle of the church and says, "Oh, Jesus, fuck me," really loud. I was like, okay, movie, you win.
It was definitely a moment to remember.
There's a lot of funny stuff here. There's some stuff that doesn't work as well as others, like we said, but ultimately at the end, I was like, you know what? I was at least a little bit heartwarmed by this. I thought it had kind of the message it was going for was kind of a more adult message to match the adult comedy that was going on. And despite its flaws, I still think this is a film that's going to find itself regularly on the Christmas movie rotation to watch in years to come. Like I said, I would definitely pair this with the Harold and Kumar Christmas movie as like a 1-2 punch for drug humor Christmas movies. I give this as well 8 out of 10 Hanukkah candles.
Very good.